Hello and welcome to episode 106 of Speak Beastie for February 9th, 2020.
I'm Anne.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Shannon.
Guys, what's good? How is everybody?
Can you guys believe that it's only January? Like, hasn't this been longest year ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, as of recording this, it is finally the last day of January. Like, we made it.
God, it's like the 89th of January and we still have 3 weeks to go.
No.
And February's longer this year. Like, actually. Uh-huh.
Yeah. By one whole day.
Oh my God. Whose idea was that?
I work in downtown Chicago, and like the guys were taking down the Christmas lights on the trees. So now we're just getting into the depressing part of winter where you can't even look at the Christmas lights anymore. It's just dark dreary and snowing.
I'm so surprised the street decorations in Long Island City, which is part of Queens, for people who don't know that, and if people don't know where Queens is, that's outside of Manhattan, so hopefully that clued you in. They still have, like, I mean, they're not exclusively, like, holiday decorations, they're more just, like, winter lights, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought they would have been gone by now. I feel like I remember them being gone by now, but every night when I come home from work, I'm like, oh, it's still there. Like, I'm not mad, I'm just slightly confused about it. Like, I feel like I don't understand time anymore. Because I'm like, oh, okay, it's fine. I'm not mad. It's extra light. We could always use more light.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon, how's your head?
It's fine.
Good.
I mean, I'm getting headaches, but like, whatever.
Oh, gosh.
It's just brain damage.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's all. NBD.
Yeah, you know how it be.
Sometimes it just be like that.
It just be like that sometimes. It really do. Let's go to the news.
I have one last joke before the news. It's such an old joke. I'm so sorry, everybody. There's a big sports game this weekend as we're recording this, but not when this episode comes out. But are you guys excited for the sports game? Because the last time I cared about a sports game, a Hufflepuff died and Voldemort came back to life.
I mean, I was going to say that I feel like Ireland's really the more technically proficient team, but Crumb's the one to beat when it comes to getting the snitch.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the news now. And now for the Phoenix Register. Hi all, it's Lizzie. This is an additional recording because while we have a really fun and goofy episode ahead from the Phoenix Register all the way through the new case, there is something that has emerged in the news since our original recording session. Before we go any further, I'd like to let you know that this may be triggering for those who are impacted by the topic of abuse. If you'd like to skip this segment, we absolutely respect and encourage that and ask you go ahead to the end of our Patreon ad segment and rejoin us at the top of the proper Phoenix Register. We always want our listeners to be comfortable and enjoy our show and now ask you to consider if listening to what comes next is okay for you. Now is the time to start fast forwarding if you want. After recording, audio emerged that gave further indication that in the complicated relationship between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, that Heard appears to be the abuser while Depp comes across as the victim. We as a podcast feel a responsibility to bring this up as we have covered the topic in the past and numerous hosts have been vocal on where they stand within this topic. We want to take a moment to say that we believe all victims deserve to be heard, regardless of gender identity. Men are also victims of abuse regularly, which is a topic that doesn't get as much attention as it should. We spoke a lot about how Warner Brothers, J.K. Rowling, and other castmates have spoken about Depp since the original event, and we'd like to note that they have all been positive in their relationships with Depp and communicated his dedication and passion for this series and the opportunity to portray Gellert Grindelwald. Speak Beastie, of course, does not have a personal relationship with any of those parties, and we'd like to implore that we all respect their own privacy and what they choose or choose not to share with the public eye. We did want to make sure to say that we were reacting to the information we had, but based on this, it seems that information was incorrect, and therefore, so were we. We encourage anyone struggling with this issue to reach out and speak up to whomever they feel comfortable with, whether it be friends, family, or licensed help. For additional resources, please check out the National Domestic Violence Hotline online at thehotline.org or call 1-800-799-7233. Again, the National Domestic Violence Hotline can be found online at thehotline.org or 1-800-799-7233. We hope you enjoy the rest of the episode, and we love you. Thank you.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
Yes, Shannon, speaking of Catherine's, we just thought it would be interesting and, like, worthwhile to give a general, like, life update on some of the Fantastic Beasts cast members. So, at this point, we're, like, 98% sure that Catherine Waterston has had her baby. We have no confirmation because there's, like, no news about it, which is kind of why my brain was confused when I started looking into it. But she announced her pregnancy in November 2018, so math means she should have a baby by now.
She could have had a couple babies and by this point.
She could have had a couple. But if she did, congrats. We're probably saying it first.
Yay!
So, you know, number one. And we're assuming that means that she's almost done with maternity leave, if that exists in Hollywood, because Jude Law is growing back the beard.
Woo!
It is time for Daddy Dumbledore, Beardy Dumble. Because we are getting close, kids. 651 days to go till Fantastic Beasts 3. Filming starts next month, February 2020. As long as they didn't lie or they didn't push it back again. But we are actually making progress. And I think that's just exciting.
I'm excited.
We've waited this long just to get to filming. So we're almost there, kids. And then the one piece of news that we actually have is an actor by the name of Cooper Andrews might be joining Fantastic Beasts 3. So Andrews is known for being a character in The Walking Dead. He's been on the show for the last 4 years, if I have that correct, which means he knows Dan Fogler because Fogler is also on Walking Dead. The news that we got is basically Reddit threads where fans were talking about how they're pretty convinced that his character is going to die in the season 10B premiere, and they're not really happy about it because, you know, they're going off of the speculation that he's going to be busy shooting the new Fantastic Beasts movie in London. Now, there's no, like, official announcement. We haven't gotten any word about new cast members or anything like that yet. So this is just stuff that's been popping up on the internet, and just welcome to the family, if it's true. He grew up in Smithtown, Long Island. What is up, Long Island? I'm from Long Island. This guy's from Long Island. We should talk. Get him on the show. If it's real, we got a connection. He knows Dan. We know Dan. It's fine. It's going to be great. Yeah, and just to wrap that up, by looking at his IMDb, we were curious what sort of baseline speculation any of us have for what his role could be. I think just by judging on appearance alone, and this was kind of the consensus within our Speak Beastie common room, that he could be like a Brazilian wizard since we're going to Brazil. Any additional thoughts on this mysterious character that we have no information on except for Reddit?
I mean, he's half Samoan, so it would be cool if they did something with that. But yeah, I think it is more likely that he'll be a Brazilian wizard.
Or a Brazilian muggle.
Oh!
Ooh. Or who knows what they call them there, because we can't call muggles muggles in
Hang
America.
Hang on, let me look up non-magical in Portuguese.
Oh, yes, please do.
I did look up maternity laws, or maternity leave for Warner Brothers, and they have 10 weeks of paid maternity leave for the primary caregiver, an additional 2 weeks of paid maternity leave for the secondary caregiver, an additional 6 paid weeks of bonding leave.
So 16 weeks?
18 weeks, including the 2 weeks for the non-primary caregiver.
And that, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. I'm going to reveal how poor I am at math right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, that's 1 month.
Five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, eleven, twelve, thirteen, four and a half months.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Not bad. Okay, so if she was 3 months pregnant in November 2018, all right, let's really just dig in here. can we get some CSI or SVU music in the background, considering like her dad was on SVU? Can we just like get that going? Okay, so let's say she was 3 months. Okay, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, baby should have happened around here, April 2019, May 2019. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh yeah, she's fine. It's time to go back to work. I'm so sorry. We're done.
Leave that baby behind, Catherine.
Like, I understand we were also taking time for like script problems and everything else, which like, please and thank you. But like, no, we good. She's been good since like Thanksgiving. Before Thanksgiving. Time to put in the work. Save up also, for that college fund.
They have childcare for on lot for kids up to the age of 5. So she'll be able to bring the baby with. She can indeed have it all.
Ooh, the baby could be in the movie. So what do we think the baby would play?
A Brazilian wizard. baby Brazilian wizard.
Yeah. I just want it to be in a little blooper, and they put a little niffler next to it, and it's baby and niffler. Oh, it's like watching a baby with a puppy. It's like the same thing.
Can the baby be Baby Yoda, but in Fantastic Beasts?
Oh, we are crossing a lot of lines here today.
I'm sorry. It's not even, I have no excuse. It's only 8:30 here.
I know. Oof. We're getting wild on this Friday night. Wait, what is it?
What?
Oh, I thought you had figured out the...
Oh, no, I've got it up on Google Translate, but I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to hold my phone up to the mic and see if the voice works.
Okay, so this is supposed to be the Google Translate version of non-magical in Portuguese.
All right, let's give this a shot. Just turn the phone all the way up.
Não mágico.
Did y'all hear that?
Non-magical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like now so, magical.
Sure, why not? We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. So that's it for the news.
Nice.
I think that was pretty solid, considering what we've got. But everyone remember, we are so close to filming, which means then we get, like, all those undercover photos and real news. And it's just going to be... We get news.
Yes. Who knows? The next episode, like, might have news.
Yeah, it'll probably come out tomorrow.
That sounds fake.
Shall we check the owl post?
Yeah, let's see what the owls have brought us.
All right. I'm just gonna open up this letter.
Oh my god.
Oh, I didn't know we had to bring our own Foley. Hang on.
Is the owl okay after that? It sounded like
That was me taking the letter and opening it.
Oh, okay. Good.
The owl's judging me right now.
Great.
Okay. Let's just open this up. All right, our episode 104 question, which is what the owl posts are responding to, is will the way you decide to consume Potter and Fantastic Beasts change after J.K. Rowling's tweet? Why or why not? So we've got a couple things here. So our first comment is from Ev. She says, in the last episode, you mentioned how Harry's relationship with Dumbledore evolves once it becomes clear that Dumbledore was not always a wise old wizard that we thought we knew. and Harry thought he knew, and how this parallels fandom's relationship with J.K. Rowling. One of the hosts said, but Harry didn't have to deal with Dumbledore being transphobic, which is true. But a big difference is that at that point in the story, Dumbledore is dead. JKR is, however, very much alive. I don't think that people's lives necessarily follow a linear path, i.e. people gradually improve in all aspects as they get older. I think it's a lot more complicated and entirely possible for J.K. Rowling to evolve for the better in some aspects, for the worse in others. As an alive human being, which is kind of a funny phrase, I'm an alive human being. As an alive human being, there's scope for her to change, and that includes changing for the worse as well as for the better. This is not an option for Dumbledore in the Deathly Hallows. Who knows what adult Harry would have thought of some of his opinions if Albus had lived to tell the tale. Would he still be able to accept the good in Dumbledore along with the bad, being faced with a living complicated person rather than just a memory of his dead mentor? As for the podcast question of the week, I've just started rereading the series. Plan to do it before that accursed tweet. And honestly, I was worried that some of the magic will be gone, but I'm pleased to report that it is still a great comfort to me in this rather stressful time. I was also worried last year before my visit to the studio tour that I might not enjoy it because it's there as a WB money grab, right? But what I was overwhelmed by is a very real sense of the place humming with love. All of those objects made over a long period of time by so many people who clearly loved the job they were doing. It wasn't just JKR and WB. Harry Potter has become so much more, and I choose to focus on the love. Heart emoji.
Aw, thanks, Ev. That was great.
That's a really good comment. And that's a really good point about, like, you know, Harry was grappling with learning all this stuff about Dumbledore, and he wasn't able to talk to Dumbledore about it. I mean, we aren't personally able to talk to J.K. Rowling. But, I mean, that's another thing. Harry had a very personal relationship with Dumbledore that,
true,
you know, most fans don't have with J.K. Rowling. I still think it's a kind of... It was a good metaphor to look at,
Yeah.
But yeah, good points.
And before we move on to the next one, the last point about, you know, like, things made with lots of love and it wasn't just JKR and WB, it's so true. And for anyone that is feeling conflicted and, you know, maybe wants a reminder of all of the other people that, you know, truly love the material and put, you know, their livelihood into it. There's a great docuseries called, it's actually not even a series, I apologize. It's just a documentary called When Harry Left Hogwarts. And it really focuses a lot on the background people who made the films. And you get to see an inside look into, like, the carpenters and the builders that that worked on all 8 films and, you know, what it meant to have, like, a stable job and things like that. So it's very true, and some you can find definitely different ways to rediscover the love and remind yourself that there were a lot more people involved, despite, you know, J.K. Rowling's unfortunate comments at this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true enough. I remember when I met Mina Lima back in, 2012 at LeagueCon, and I told them how much I loved their work, and that still holds true. Like, no matter how I feel about Joe Rowling, like, the aesthetic of the Harry Potter movies and Mina Lima's insanely hard work on those movies is amazing, and it's incredible what they designed.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next comment is from Jude. I don't have my copy of Deathly Hallows in front of me, so I'll paraphrase J.K. Rowling in the next sentence. Just because it is happening in your head, why on earth should that mean that it is not real? Except Jude wrote it in all caps.
I'm not
going to yell at you. I hope Rowling has a chance to reread her own words soon. She might remember the power of words to inspire and hopefully realize that words also have the power to hurt. As a member of the LGBTQ community, I am part of the G, which does not stand for Gryffindor. Ravenclaw rules. Yes. I, too, was disappointed with her recent words. I am older just as she is, and I understand the comfort in being set in your ways, but I would like to think that by now I have realized that not everyone experiences the same realities. What is real for some people, like right-wing conservative politicians, is not real for me. Likewise, I realize my reality is different from everyone else. Isn't that what really being human is all about? And then I don't remember what this PS is in reference to, if it's in reference to something in the episode, but Jude says, I'm sure I saw a Niffler on a Nimbus yesterday. May I request a podcast where others share their sightings of Nifflers? I am sure Nifflers don't exist only in my own reality. Guess that's not a reference to something.
I don't
that's
think it
just
is.
Jude saw a Niffler.
I think that's just Nifflers being
I
out and
I read
about.
It weird the first time in my head. I want to know more about this Niffler on a Nimbus.
Same.
And I would like that to be a podcast that exists.
Can call it Niffler spotting or Niff spotting or something.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the G, which does not stand for Gryffindor. I know that you said a lot of other good things, Jude, but that was very good.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was great.
Are we ready to take it to the main discussion?
Yes. Yeah. And before we do, just a quick thank you again to those for writing in. We love getting your thoughts on past discussions and episodes, and we appreciate you taking the time to connect with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep them coming.
Okay. Today's main discussion is about continuity.
Nitpicking.
Who needs it? Said David Yates.
Not us, says Warner Brothers.
What's continuity?
What is it?
Rolling.
What are they writing?
Chocolates. Continuity, of course, referring to like stuff that does not make sense from one movie or one book to the next. Or one shot to the next. You know, you read those lists about movies and it's like, oh, the soda was full in this shot and then in the next shot it's empty. What's up with that?
I read a lot of those about Crimes of Grindelwald, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Specifically about Jude Law's mustache.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, apparently,
we were just talking about his beard, but his mustache can't keep it together. Huh?
Apparently, the mustache changes, like, heights or something. I don't know. And something with a hat. There's a lot, guys.
Okay, well, what we're going to talk about also has to do with Dumbledore, most of it. And it's kind of like his mustache, but it's like the plot of the movie.
Gorgeous. Perfect.
Okay.
What a great intro.
So I wanted to start by talking about like this kind of two different approaches to talking about continuity inconsistencies and stuff. And this is the Watsonian approach and the Doylist approach. So this refers to Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, being the narrator of Sherlock Holmes, the fictional narrator, and then Arthur Conan Doyle being the real life writer of Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes. So the Watsonian approach to stuff like this is to come up with a in-universe, in-character explanation. So the reason these terms are like based out of Sherlock Holmes is because there's a lot of continuity errors across all of Sherlock Holmes. Like Watson's first name is different sometimes. So the Watsonian approach to these things would be, oh, Watson doesn't remember stuff like his name.
War wound.
No, the Watsonian approach would, yeah, it would be like, oh, Watson had two war wounds, and that's why it changes places. Watson just doesn't remember the year that this case happened because it doesn't make sense. Or even the name thing. So he's referred to as John, like, twice in section headers, and then James once in dialogue, and he's John H. Watson. The explanation there is that his middle name is Hamish, and James is short for Hamish, so he's John Hamish Watson. So that's like Watsonian explanation. So in larger scale, other things, the Watsonian explanation might be like, oh, like when an actor changes in a movie, it's like, oh, well, that character had plastic surgery and that's why they look different. And, you know, some things like this have Watsonian explanations within the story, within the text. Some of it, Watsonian explanations, are fans coming up with stuff. Another term for this would be intradiegetic, but that's no fun, so we're not going to say that. The Doyleist approach, on the other hand, would be the out-of-universe, out-of-character explanation of this kind of stuff. So the Doyleist approach to Sherlock Holmes stuff is like, well, Arthur Conan Doyle just didn't care, and he didn't get stuff right. He didn't keep track of stuff. He didn't know what Watson's first name was. On a larger scale, it would be like just saying, oh, so this actor changed because they didn't like the old actor. It's just like putting the onus more on the creator of the work or the creative team. And the technical term for this would be extradiegetic. So yeah, I think these are two kind of, I like that these are terms that exist so that you can kind of put a name to the two different approaches that I feel like we're going to end up taking with all of the things we talk about. Yeah. And then, Anne, you pointed
I was skimming through the page after Shannon linked to it in the doc.
Yeah, because this is from TV Tropes. I mean, it's terms used elsewhere, but you can read more on TV Tropes.
But this is just, it's unrelated to Fantastic Beasts, but I just thought it was so delightful. I wanted to share it with everybody. I don't want it to stay hidden in this page on TV Tropes. So just quoting from TV Tropes, in the German-speaking fandom of the Disney Ducks comic universe, the two ways of analyzing the stories are called Donaldismus Literaticus, which treats the works of Karl Barks and others as works of art and literature, and Donaldismus Archaeologicus, which treats them as factual reports from the Earth-like planet called Stella Anatium, the star of the ducks. In the D-O-N-A-L-D, Ario, sorry in advance, I did Google how to pronounce these, but I have forgotten. Deutsche Organisation Nichtkommerzieller Anhänger des Lauteren Donaldismus, which means the German Organization for the Non-Commercial Adherence of True Donaldism, the latter tends to dominate. Donald Duck comics are serious business.
That's,
oh, wow.
I know, it's so good.
So amazing. Gosh, I love Donald Duck. We stan.
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe he's going to be a Brazilian wizard in the next movie. What?
Shannon, I would love an entire main discussion where we just go into the whole Sherlock Holmes conversation of this continuity, because I would love to know if this is just referring to the BBC series, if this is the book, if this is the RDJ films, if this is that weird NBC show.
It comes from, the terms come from the original canon.
Yeah.
That Arthur Conan Doyle couldn't keep track of stuff. So it is interesting to look at like different adaptations and see, you know, what do they choose to do? Almost everyone chooses to call him John and not James. But why? He's only called John like one more time.
Dang.
Yeah. I think because he's called John first.
Probably.
Jinx. But let's talk about Fantastic Beasts. So we've got kind of, I would say, like three big topics and then a few little topics.
Yeah.
So our first big one is McGonagall. What's she doing there?
I don't know, Shannon. You tell me.
Okay. So McGonagall's in Crimes of Grindelwald as a teacher. You know, I should have looked up like how old that actress is. So she's a teacher, an established teacher in Crimes of Grindelwald, which takes place in 1927. Now, in Order of the Phoenix, which takes place in 1995, McGonagall tells Umbridge that she's been working at Hogwarts for 39 years, which would have her starting in 1956, which is much later. That's 25 years later.
It's a lot wrong.
Well, and not to mention that Crimes of Grindelwald takes place in 1927, but we see McGonagall in a flashback, right? Do we?
Now, right. Yes.
Yes, yes. We see her in the flashback.
Yes, because he's a child.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, like,
at least like 10 years earlier.
Okay. So, quick update. Fiona Glascott was the actress who played McGonagall in Fantastic Beasts. She was born in 1982, so she was 36 at the time of filming.
Okay.
Or at the time the movie was released.
So we're looking at McGonagall in Crimes of Grindelwald in the early 1900s, who's in her 30s. But in Order of the Phoenix, she says she's only worked at Hogwarts for 39 years, which would have her start in 1956.
Yeah.
In Crimes of Grindelwald, Newt is 30. So if he was like 14, like when that happened, that's about like 1913.
Do we see McGonagall in the flashback section?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we do because I've got the screenplay.
Okay. Because I can't remember exactly. Let's double check on that. Regardless, it still doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense.
And even more so, according to the original sort of Pottermore stuff, Wizarding World stuff, about McGonagall, she worked at the Ministry for 2 years immediately after finishing school at Hogwarts. And then right after that, she started working at Hogwarts. So that would put her birth year no earlier than 1935, which is 8 years after Crimes of Grindelwald takes place.
Okay, update from the screenplay. Scene 67 is set 17 years previous to the action of the movie. So it does state that Leeta is 13, so she is 30 at the time of the movie, right? And they're the two nasty Griffin Girl girls who are talking all mean about her. And then one of the Gryffindor girls, the one who does not get her mouth sealed shut, screams, Professor McGonagall, Lestrange has done it again. And then we hear McGonagall say, Lestrange, stop writing Lestrange.
What was the years prior you said it
was? It was 17 years prior to the action of Crimes of Grindelwald. So Leeta and Newt are 13.
Which is 1927?
Yes, yeah, so it's 1910 that the scene takes place.
So mid-30s McGonagall.
Okay. At least that math makes sense. Oh, thank goodness. I was so scared. Okay, Newt was 13.
Okay.
I was, like, looking up Newt's birthday and getting really stressed by numbers. Okay.
So
okay,
was that, J.K. Rowling.
That math works.
That's the only math that makes sense.
Yep.
The only one.
Okay. It doesn't make sense is the point.
Right.
McGonagall shouldn't be there.
She shouldn't be there. She should not be there.
No. And tell us what you were
saying.
Yeah,
so though. When I was going down my Minerva McGonagall rabbit hole earlier this evening, I found a Reddit thread that suggested that Fantastic Beasts is rooted in movie canon instead of book canon, and that Maggie Smith is older than McGonagall should have been at the time of the events of I just did the math for Sorcerer's Stone. So Maggie Smith was 67 during the events of Philosopher's Stone, and McGonagall should have been about 56. And then I was like, well, let me
Pretty
hang
much
on. Let
all of the adults in the original series are older than they're supposed to be.
Lily and James are the oldest 21-year-olds ever.
So like,
but then I did the math. I was like, okay, well, maybe this works. Hang on, let me double check some stuff. And that has McGonagall being, if she's 67 at the time, in 1991, at the times that Philosopher's Stone is happening, that has her being born in 1924, which means at the time of Crimes of Grindelwald, she would have been 3. So it still doesn't work.
It makes no sense.
And even if you take the Harry Potter books, which have no actual years stamped on them, and you shift them like a little bit earlier, they can't be that much earlier. Like, the Harry Potter books don't make sense taking place in, like, the 70s.
I've got two ways in which this works.
Okay.
But they have to be the both of them together. Ready?
So we are approaching this from the Watsonian way right now.
Okay.
Right.
First, take all of the material, all the source material.
Okay.
Throw it out the window.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. Let me open my window. I'll be right
Second.
Back.
Second, Nick Flamel, for some reason, was feeling like real kind and was like, I'ma just give out some Sorcerer's Stone to everybody for Elixir of Life. And that's why she's still around. Okay. That at least so, that would explain the long life.
Okay,
in this non-possible.
He gave it to her when she was a baby, and she was a baby for like 50 years. Like
baby she's Yoda. Baby Yoda.
McGonagall was Baby Yoda all along.
The true Fantastic Beast was the Baby Yoda inside McGonagall all along. That sounds like a Cards Against Muggles card.
Oh my god. I have seen people say, I think the classic Watsonian approach to this is, okay, she just didn't work those 39 years in a row, but, like, why?
Yeah, it's dumb.
Right.
That's weird.
She was, but I think she was still working while she was married.
For, like, 20 years.
She took some time off. Wasn't she married?
To grieve.
Yeah, she was working while she was married, and she was only married for 3 years, and then he died, so...
Right, she took some time off. Enough.
I'm not judging.
She took 20 years off. I mean, you know, what? Do what you gotta do.
I'm trying to pad the timeline here.
Okay, so the Doyleist approach to this is what? They just wanted McGonagall to be there as a nostalgia pull. It's bad fan service because we're fans, and when we don't feel serviced... I feel very disserviced.
I mean, I won't lie. When I rewatched, I'm digging her little Edwardian Hogwarts robes. Like, if I could commission someone to make me those, I would in a heartbeat.
She looks great. She acts like McGonagall in what very little she's in there.
Someone else could have worn them.
It's like she doesn't do anything. That means she has to be McGonagall.
Mm-hmm.
So she's only McGonagall because... They
said she is.
Oh. And, like, she's only referred to as McGonagall in the movie, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, the screenplay does specifically refer to her as Minerva McGonagall. But she's never called Minerva in the movie.
So, I mean, another Watsonian approach could be like, oh, maybe she's not McGonagall. Maybe she's an ancestor. An ancestor also named Minerva.
An ancestor who has her father's last name who comes from a Muggle family.
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that works. I think we solved it.
A distant ancestor. All right, so let's go to the next one.
Yeah, unfortunately, this one's never going to be solved. I'm so sorry, everybody.
And in the next one, I also have another point that, like, goes back to McGonagall. But, okay, the next one is, in Crimes of Grindelwald, Dumbledore is teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts, even though it was stated in Chamber of Secrets that he was a transfiguration teacher, and he would have been transfiguration teacher in 1943 in the Chamber of Secrets flashbacks. So why is he teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts?
I mean, in this, not that this explains why he's teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts, but in this, again, once again, in the screenplay, Travers puts the admonitors, the cuffs on him when they think that he's the one who sent Newt to America. He's the one behind sending Newt all these wacky places to track the Obscurial. And Trevor says, from now on, I shall know every spell you cast. I'm doubling the watch on you, and you will no longer teach Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Right.
So he could have switched over to Transfiguration as from there. Just like, because he's still clearly employed by Hogwarts. You know, they're not going to make him be the caretaker or whatever. They're going to pop him into Transfiguration or something.
It's kind of like when Umbridge tried to get rid of Trelawney. Trelawney? I don't know if I'm saying that right. I don't know, guys.
Trelawney?
Trelawney. Thank you. I was seeing the letters differently in my head.
Okay.
But it's almost like the same thing. And then Dumbledore was like, well, you can't kick her off the ground. It's like, he's still there.
I think, like, really, I think we have to approach this one from a Doyleist approach. I was actually thinking about this. And it's because the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom is so iconic. Like, it's instantly recognizable even for casual or non-fans of Harry Potter. Like, that's the reason it's the only classroom we really see in the castle queue at Forbidden Journey.
And from a story standpoint, a Boggart lesson is is very good insight into characters. It's very good setup for the Leetah storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Another wrench in a sort of, you know... in-universe Watsonian explanation is that, again, according to the McGonagall page of Pottermore/Wizarding World, when she asked to join The staff at Hogwarts said, quote, "The owl returned within hours, offering her a job in the Transfiguration Department under head of department Albus Dumbledore." So that would have made him head of the First of all, there are departments.
Yes, I have a lot of questions.
Would have made him head of the Transfiguration Department before McGonagall, who is an ageless being, joined the staff somewhere in early 1900s. So he was head of Transfiguration, not just a Transfiguration teacher, he was head of the department, and then he became Defense Against the Dark Arts, and then he went back to Transfiguration.
So, I'd like to unpack this a little more.
Are there multiple
teachers in these departments? Is that what they're trying to say? Because that makes sense.
Maybe in the early 1900s there were, and then not to get dark, but maybe there was a war.
A war?
Layoffs.
Yeah.
Different kind of war, Anne, but okay.
Harry Potter and the budget cuts.
Yeah, they cut the theater department first. That's why we've never seen one. Here's a character question. From Dumbledore that we know in the books, and specifically from what we learn of like how he did grow after his experience with Grindelwald, do we think that Dumbledore would have wanted to be a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher? Because I feel like this is the guy who was like, I could be Minister of Magic, but I don't want to put myself in that position because I know it would be bad for me. I feel like even though it's Defense Against the Dark Arts, he wouldn't want to expose himself next to Dark Arts.
Mm.
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
I think it's a lot better than my poor joke that I was going to make that Dumbledore just wanted to really beef up his resume by switching and trying different departments out.
Maybe next I'll go to the arithmetic department.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, he was really trying to distance himself by taking himself out of that teaching. He at least didn't need to continue to, not necessarily familiarize himself, but, you know, interact with it on the day-to-day. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Maybe he was just a fill-in teacher. He's just, like, a substitute when the DADA teacher was sick.
He's an adjunct?
Yeah. You know? He's like, I'll just go teach that Boggart lesson again.
Do you think Hang on, let me
get my jazzy records.
Yeah, what happens when a teacher's sick at Hogwarts? I guess there's a department.
Like, well, do they just cancel class?
Lupin has werewolf hangover like Snape teaches.
I guess.
Guys, I'm starting to think that this school doesn't make sense.
What?
I'm starting to think there's some continuity errors in Hogwarts.
Oh no. We're making it worse.
So we're just gonna go up in distressing continuity errors. You know, the McGonagall error is like, all right. And then this one's like, it doesn't make sense. It's weird, but like, okay. The next one is like, hold on a second, guys. So the next one is the existence of Aurelius Dumbledore.
All right, guys. Let me break down some math.
Break this down for me. Because I was going to do it, and then you'd already done it, and I was like, phew.
No, I actually, we discussed this in some detail on episode 93, I think it was. But we did not have enough space for me to feel all the rage that Aurelius Dumbledore makes me feel in that episode, so I'm gonna bring it out here.
Okay.
All right. Anne's been waiting 13 episodes for this.
I did my waiting 13 episodes of it in my living room.
That's the title. Such a long title, though.
So,
whoever makes that call.
Credence. When was he born? First of all, if we are looking at strictly the boat timeline, where he came over from the UK to the US on the boat with Leta, it's 1901. However, Credence's adoption papers state that his date of birth is November 9th, 1904. Now, the 1901 date of birth would make Credence 26 at the time of Crimes of Grindelwald, but the 1904 makes him 23, and I feel like his actions and the way he's acting makes more sense for someone who's closer to 23 than 26. Like, not saying right. that someone who's 26 necessarily has their stuff together, but they probably have a little bit more than someone who's 23.
I will also say it's hard.
As someone who is 26, I would like to confirm that while I do have my stuff more together than at 23, I still don't have a lot of stuff together.
I have a lot of stuff.
Oh, I have a lot of stuff.
I think it's fair to say that it even within the canon, it would make sense to not really be able to nail right. down Credence's birth year, because we don't. Like, they wouldn't know his birthday. For real, skis.
That's a valid point.
She stole him, and then, like, by the time, you know, we get to the adoption papers, like, did they, you know, just lie about his birthday? Has it yeah. just been messed up, you know?
But depending on when Mary Lou adopted him, there's a big difference between a newborn yeah. and a three-year-old.
That's true. Maybe for the birthday, you know, this is the Watsonian explanation. Maybe the date of birth on the adoption papers is the day that she adopted him.
Maybe.
You know, and she was just like, I'm just going to put that because we don't know.
Yeah. But regardless, whenever Credence was born, Kendra Dumbledore died in 1899, and Percival Dumbledore was imprisoned in Azkaban in about 1890, presuming that Ariana was born in 1885 and the Muggle boys attacked her when she was six. So, to put it delicately, there's no way there are other little Dumbledores running around after 1890-ish.
Well, I guess he could be a child of just Kendra and some other guy.
Yeah, but then how did she have a kid 2 years after she died?
So in that case, he would have been born in 1899, and he would be, like,
and then you're looking at, like, nearly a 30-year-old?
Yeah, and that's older than Ezra Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, think Dumbledore would know if his mom had a baby right before she died.
Yeah, he would have said something. Or, like, there would have been something about it in the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore.
Would he have said something?
Okay, he wouldn't have said something, but there would have been something in the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And lastly, my pet theory about this is that, really, if he actually is Aurelius Dumbledore, and Grindelwald is not lying about this, which he 100% is, then it's possible that Aurelius is related to Albus, but not his brother. Maybe he is a cousin or something yeah. like that. So he still has the name Dumbledore, but not necessarily the familial relationship that Grindelwald is implying.
Right. Also, I mean, we know that, like, Percival Dumbledore died in prison. We don't know exactly when. I don't know. Something could have happened in there.
They're not going to pull a Barty Crouch Sr., are they?
Dumbledore Crouch. Gets turned into a bone and
no, I have this wrong. I've got my characters wrong.
Switching people?
Yes, the switching people.
And stuff. That'd be way too complicated. That's too complicated in Harry Potter.
I think it's lazy if they do that. They already did it.
Is.
It.
Yeah.
I think
get your own source material, J.K. Rowling.
I think him being like a cousin or something,
that I would be okay with,
would be the best explanation for this. That Grindelwald right. is lying, but not completely lying. Yeah.
It's a white lie.
Yeah.
Because they're white people. Oh, that was so bad.
That was really funny. But yeah, this one doesn't make any sense.
No sense. Like, there's, I remember.
And I so badly want it to make sense. Like, I want there to be an explanation for this.
It's like the only Watsonian explanation for this is Grindelwald is lying.
Right.
I mean, he's got to be lying. Like, that's always been my thought, because the way it's set up in the movie is he's drawing credence to this conclusion.
As time goes on, I'm jumping ship to the, he must be lying side, But, like, deep down in my body, I'm like, I don't want him to be lying, because then I feel like this entire second movie was a waste of time.
Here's what I'd say. I think the Watsonian in me is like, well, yeah, he's lying. But I think the Doyleist in me is like, well, yeah, J.K. Rowling and WB would pull some shit. Like, yeah. But why? If he's not lying, what's the point?
Right.
And where does it lead? Why does it not come up in Harry Potter? Like, so much of Deathly Hallows is about these three siblings and their tragic backstory. Why would the fourth sibling and his tragic backstory never be mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, if he turns out to be a big part of these movies, and it turns out that he actually is Aurelius Dumbledore, then his complete exclusion yeah. from Deathly Hallows makes zero sense.
And that's not even a thing that you can explain as, like, oh, because some stuff with the movies were like, oh, well, maybe it's just following movie canon more than book canon. Like, it's supposed to be kind of both, and so they're, you know, balancing on that line a lot of the time. But this is not a thing that would be like, oh, well, but it's fine for movie canon. Like, no, it doesn't work in either canon. Maybe in Cursed Child canon.
Woof.
Cursed
Saw
Child
that again
would,
last weekend.
Cursed Child would have been a better title for Crimes of Grindelwald, by the way.
Oh, ooh. Man, you're right. Maybe they should have called the stage play Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah. Or Crimes of Voldemort.
They needed to change a few things to make that work, but yeah.
Grindelwald should have been the stage play and not in this movie.
All right, here are ways where Aurelius Dumbledore being a real sibling can work.
Okay.
Okay. I hope everyone understands that this is not going to be good, considering I've tried this before and it didn't end well. One, he dies by the end of movie 5. And they agreed to never talk about it because the death was so horrific.
Sure.
Two, they Marvel Steve Rogers him, and he goes back in time with a deranged time turner a la Cursed Child that can go back years, and you never see him again.
I thought you were going to say he gets frozen in ice, and I was really looking forward to Creedence Barebones' wacky 21st century adventures.
I'm trying to decide if I have a third. Like, how do I make this make sense? I don't know. I don't. But I really want there to be an explanation, because then this entire movie makes me pretty upset. Even though I love it, and I still love this film, but I can be upset with it and love it at the same time.
It's okay to approach things you love critically. It's actually better
yes.
if you do.
That's all we do.
It's true.
On this show. That's the point. Yeah, quick shout out to people. If you don't like it when we criticize Crimes of Grindelwald, then you can't listen to a podcast about it. Because otherwise, we'd just be sitting here like, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I like the part where Aurelius Dumbledore was there.
Yeah.
Hey, those episodes do exist. It's usually the first episode right after the movie comes out when we're so happy to have a movie again.
Oh my god. Yeah, in 2 years when the next movie comes out, we're all gonna be like, oh my gosh.
We have I like the part where Queenie was there.
We have something to talk about. Yeah, you know, in a year and a half when our main discussions are like, oh, like Rosier's hat could be something.
Was fierce.
I'm glad we're poking jokes at ourselves. This yeah. is good. This is therapeutic. This is good.
So do we want to go into some of these other little things that yeah. I think Lizzie wrote in here?
Yes. First, I have to move my fantastic beast, the cat, because she wants to talk into the microphone.
I love her.
She's a podcaster, too.
Yeah. She literally, her entire face was right up in it, and I was like, what are you going to do? All right, so here's just some, like, lighthearted goofs of continuity. You know, less heavy, more like, ah, ha, ha, ha. And we can just move on and not lose sleep at night over them. So the first one, the first three, by the way, are from IMDb. So First one, when Newt and Tina are caught infiltrating the French Ministry of Magic, Newt can clearly be heard saying that the cats are, quote, familiars, despite the fact that on Pottermore, now Wizarding World, screenwriter and Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling clearly states that familiars, quote, do not exist within the world of Harry Potter, unquote.
Oops.
However, Newt actually states that cats are, quote, spirit familiars, unquote, which may be something very different from the traditional concept of familiars that Rowling stated do not exist. So there's your whoops.
I mean, they definitely don't act like a witch's familiar.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is still weird that they would use that term.
Yeah. Whoops, number one. Two.
Oops.
Nagini was introduced in the film as an animal from Indonesia, even though Indonesia became independent only in 1945. In 1927, it was generally known as the East Indies. However, the name Indonesia has actually been known since the 18th century, especially in academic circles. In the late 19th century, it was popularized in Adolf Bastian's book, and by 1920s, it was known well enough, at least outside of the Netherlands, to explain its use in the context of this movie.
Does it explain it, though?
Whoops.
Oops.
That was just like, come on, guys, you could have Googled, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Number three. Newt Akio's the Niffler, but J.K. Rowling says that's not possible. Quote, while people or creatures may be indirectly moved by accioing objects that they are wearing or holding, this carries all kinds of risks because of the likelihood of injury to the person or beast attached to an object traveling at close to the speed of light. So, yeah, you can't move animals, but you can.
Oops. Apparently.
Yeah, I got nothing for that one.
Number four. Maybe one of the bigger oops that hopefully will get explained later. Leetah's death implies the end of the Lestrange family name, but we know that Rabastian and Rodolphus exist later on.
Yeah, this is a
big oops.
This is a big, this is a thing where it's like, that can't be explained away by but we wanted to do this thing.
And this is why Anne... Just because Leetah Lestrange is filming Catwoman? Batman?
The Batman. She's playing Catwoman.
She's playing Catwoman in The Batman with Cedric Diggory. Right. Correct. This is why we were talking earlier about hopefully her return in a later film and they're not really dead, but they just transfer to some type of an imprisonment or something like that. Because how? This is how.
Yeah.
Just how. And the last oops is the good old operating onto Hogwarts.
Remember when the internet had a completely collective meltdown when that teaser trailer dropped?
Freaked out.
Yeah. I'm still freaking out to this day. So, no, that one is, you know.
Oops.
That one, it's like, that can be explained as that was a rule put into place later. You know?
I guess that's true.
But, a war started and now we're let's maybe keep the schools a little bit safer. That's how I explain it away. That's my Watsonian explanation.
Okay,
it's still
so
probably just Doyleist, you know, we thought it'd look cool.
It looked cool.
Yeah.
And I see here that we have some errors that we've found will happen. We
definitely
searched the dredges of Reddit, probably, right? Lizzie, you found one here.
Oh, yes. So in the segment Fantastic Errors and How They'll Happen.
Yeah.
In Fantastic Four, Beasts and Found, we will discover that Jacob is the descendant of Merlin, mm-hmm. who secretly had an affair with Betsy Ross and goes on to be the first correspondent between the President of the United States and the President of the Magical Congress of the United States of America.
Right.
Oh, no, that's actually canon. When I met Dan Fogler at Wizard World, he told me that.
Okay.
Right.
It was very fast.
Yeah. Well, and I'm shocked that he gave away the name of the fourth movie.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Fantastic Four, Beasts lips. And Found.
And then, Anne, you've got one?
Yeah, no, I found this one on Tumblr. In Fantastic Beasts 5, Tokyo Drift, it's revealed that Molly Weasley was actually a vital eyewitness to the fight between Grindelwald and Dumbledore, right. And she just never brought it up. Oh, it didn't seem important, Dia, she says, cutting you another slice of pie.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe they told us that we're going to Japan this early right? on.
I'm really excited. I'm excited to learn what the drift is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Well, so I found one on Twitter, and this is in F6, The Beast Saga. There's going to be a sixth one, by the way.
Oh my god. Huge.
Yeah, I know, right? President Serafina Pickery, you know her, she's going to be revealed to have also been Albus Dumbledore the whole time. He was just using Polyjuice Potion. Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, I guess you can just do that now.
Yeah.
That is yeah, some
so
stock.
He was like apparating across the ocean and, you know, just running things on both ends.
You know, we should have guessed it just from the headdresses.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, and you know, we know that she can do some very powerful magic with her wand, so.
Yes, but we've never seen her and Dumbledore in the same place at the same time.
Exactly. Mm. So.
This makes a lot of sense.
We've also never seen her wand in the movie.
Oh, no.
No, it's so pretty. Don't make it not that one.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how those things pan out.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, amazing.
I'm really looking forward to Fantastic Beasts 7, The Fast and the Beasts. They should have named Crimes of Grindelwald 2 Beasts Too Fantastic.
I've been saying Too Fantastic, Two Beasts the whole time, and I'm mad that WB didn't take me up on that.
Yeah.
That's so good. I'm going to call it that from now on.
I just can't believe we're adding another 4 to 5 years onto this podcast if we're doing a 6 and 7th movie.
6 and 7, God, y'all. Yeah. Well, and they haven't announced, like, 8, 9, and 10, but we know that, like,
they're coming.
Know, the and fate of the Fantastic.
Math. It's very depressing. Don't do the math.
Okay, everyone knows I'm the grandma of this podcast. I'm already going to be like 40 when these movies end. I can't be doing it after 40. I'm sorry.
Some of us announced our retirement in the last episode. We will be retiring at the age of 30, so. Or in 2030, I mean.
My friend and I had made a joke in college before we knew Fantastic Beasts was coming out. Or maybe it was just like just when we found out that the series was going to happen. Where we were like, oh, we were like, maybe this will work out that we'll be like bringing our fetus or our baby to Harry Potter in the movies.
Oh my gosh.
And now that both of us are engaged and like planning our weddings and these films keep getting delays, we're like, oh my, what if we actually end up bringing children of our own to these movies?
And we're just, oh my gosh.
It was a trip. It was a trip.
In 10 years, we're going to be on this show, Lizzie, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, my child said this while watching the movie.
Oh, you know, my child, the college graduate, said this while watching Fantastic Beasts 17.
That's going to be Patreon exclusive material.
My daughter, her name is Pickett.
I won't do that, but it was cute for a minute. It did go through my brain really fast.
It would be so cute to call a baby Pickett. Like, that's just my little Pickett.
Aww.
Because they're just cute and they just grab stuff.
So cute.
That's what babies do.
That would be adorbs.
Okay.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Good discussion.
Good conversation, y'all.
Yeah.
That was great.
I'm excited for the Newt case. We already mentioned this thing earlier.
Head down into the Newt case.
I'm pretty terrified because I just encountered them last weekend at Cursed Child.
Oh, well, Lord.
It's like, I'm less scared because I know what it is.
But when you know to expect it, it's a little bit less scary.
When you just encounter
but everybody
one
else is terrified.
Nowhere,
so
like...
we're going to put on our jazzy records and
yeah.
we're
going to
be discussing boggarts this week.
Oh, God.
That's right. It's your greatest fear. Recording a podcast. Oh, no. So,
I will say, even though I knew they were coming in Cursed Child, I still clenched the side of my chair. And my mother was like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, I hate this part. I was like, no. Ugh.
So Boggarts.
Tell me about Boggarts.
So as I started researching them, my first thought was, I wonder what Fantastic Beasts rated them. I figure they would probably be three X's, meaning a competent wizard should cope, since it seems that getting rid of them is a fairly easy process. But as I was flipping through my copy, it went straight from Billywig to Bowtruckle. No Boggarts. And this is because Boggarts aren't beasts. They're not anything. There's an article on WizardingWorld.com that calls them non-beings, something that, quote, is not and never has been truly alive. The Potter Wiki calls them amortal, something that was never alive and cannot truly die. In fact, the Wizarding World article goes on to state that a boggart, quote, can be made to disappear, but more boggarts will inevitably arise to take their place.
Oh my freaking god.
They speculate that boggarts generate from and feed on fear.
So these are like way more terrifying than we even knew.
Right?
From the books. That's crazy.
So terrifying.
Like, the fact that they can spawn more is okay. Messed up.
Theory. When, you know the whole riddle thing that's like, where do vanished objects go into non-being?
Yeah, oh.
Vanished objects become boggarts.
Oh. I like it.
Yeah.
Because that kind of explains, like, how they can become stuff when they're...
Yeah.
Non-beings.
Because they're just matter.
Yeah.
And they can just become other matter. Wow. We just broke this case wide open.
Sorry, Newt. We'll fix it. No, we won't. Okay, so not that anyone listening to this doesn't already know what a boggart is, but to briefly summarize, in Harry Potter, a boggart is a shape-shifting creature that takes on the appearance of the viewer's worst fear. I am not 100% sure how one would turn into crushing existential dread, but go off, I guess. We first encounter them in Prisoner of Azkaban when Professor Lupin brings his third years to face off with one that's taken up residence in a spare robe closet in the staff room. Boggarts like to hide in dark and closed places like closets, under the bed, trunks, under sinks, and Lupin mentions that he found the one he and Harry practiced the Patronus charm on in Filch's filing cabinet, and later on there's one in the drawer of a desk at Grimald Place.
They're kind of like mold.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
That's definitely one way to look at it.
They're magical mold.
That's the name of Gilderoy Lockhart's newest autobiography, Magical Mold.
Magical Mold. Magical Molds and Where to Find Them. That's an episode title right there.
I love it.
We've got some good lines in this.
I just hear Lockhart in movie 2 being like, "Oh, Harry, come to get a copy of Magical Mold, I see."
That's the book that's on display in Diagon Alley at Universal. It's just copies and copies of Magical Mold.
Magical Mold and me.
Well, it's a good thing we're having such a good time, because the best way to defeat a boggart is with laughter.
Yeah.
And a friend. Because Lupin says it's always best to have company when you're dealing with a boggart. You picture the way to make it funny very clearly in your mind, then when the boggart appears, you use the incantation Ridiculous. Or Ridiculous, as David Thewlis pronounces it. If you've done it right, then your boggart will transform into something funny, and if you're Parvati Patil, it'll transform from a cobra into an even more terrifying jack-in-the-box.
I'll never understand.
Right?
Yeah.
Would like to have a chat.
Parvati. No. As you and your friend laugh at the boggart and transform your fears into something funny, it will become confused and eventually burst into wisp of smoke and vanish. We don't know anything about how boggarts look. Mad-Eye Moody sees one in the writing desk at Grimald Place in Order of the Phoenix, but he just confirms it's a boggart and doesn't say precisely what he sees. Sirius also looks through the keyhole of the desk at Grimald Place and says he's, quote, pretty sure it's a boggart, but that, quote, knowing my mother, it could be something much worse. Again, he doesn't say what he sees, just that he does see it. It makes sense. If it is transforming into your worst fear, even tucked away in a locked drawer, you don't want to announce precisely what that is to the whole room. Mm-hmm. The Wizarding World article mentions some notable boggarts in wizarding history. Quote, famous boggarts include the old Boggles of Canterbury, believed by local.
Ah, yeah, the old Boggles.
The old Boggles. He was believed by Muggles to be a mad cannibalistic hermit that lived in a cave. In reality, a particularly small boggart that learned how to make the most of echoes. The bludgeoning boggart of old London town. a boggart that had taken on the form of a murderous thug that prowled the back streets of 19th century London, which could be reduced to a hamster with one simple incantation. And the screaming bogey of Strathtully, a Scottish boggart that had fed on the fears of local muggles to the point that it had become an elephantine black shadow with glowing white eyes, but which Lyle Lupin of the Ministry of Magic eventually trapped in a matchbox. Mm-hmm. Since boggarts are non-beings, the question of how sentient they are must come up. Lupin says he's going to keep the boggart in a cupboard between Dementor lessons with Harry because the boggart will like it in there. Hermione says boggart McGonagall tells her that she failed all of her classes, and Seamus's banshee boggart screams, so they are capable of speech and sound. How much of this is pulled from the boggart by the boggart from the person's mind, and how much is actually generated from by the boggart itself is not known. Through the series, we get to see a lot of characters' boggarts. Harry's is a Dementor, which I guess you make funny by throwing a deer at it. Ron's is a spider, and Hermione's is McGonagall. Molly Weasley's is her entire family dead, one at a time, and Lupin's
Man,
is...
Man, that's what, like, there's a lot of intense scenes in right? Harry Potter, but that Molly one, like, people forget about that a lot. It's intense. That
breaks my
It's so oh, sad.
It's rough. Anyway, go on.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. And Lupin's is the moon, which Lavender thinks is a crystal ball. Rowling has extra-canonically said that Dumbledore's is Ariana, and Voldemort's is his own dead body, although I personally prefer Lego Harry Potter's take, in which Voldemort's greatest fear is Harry, and he gets rid of it by imagining Harry dropping dead.
That's funny.
So happy! What a pleasant thought!
Actually, like, Lego Harry Potter is so great in that way, because you can play as a ton of different characters, and most of them all have Voldemort as their boggart, which, according to Pottermore, is, like, the most... common boggart
sure.
is Voldemort, and you make it funny, he like turns into a baby and starts sucking his thumb. It's really cute.
That's so funny.
But Newt's boggart is a desk at the ministry, which he makes funny by turning into a wooden dragon, and Leta's is the body of her half-brother Corvus as he drowns, which is kind of hard to make funny.
Yeah.
You know what I'm wondering, have boggarts ever been known to be used as like forms of torture?
Oh, I don't
probably
think
like this is really messed up like type of thinking, mm-hmm. but like I could almost see Umbridge, you know, like when she took everyone's wands away, because if you don't have your wand and you're not extremely skilled, you know, at like wandless magic, and they just put a boggart in front of you, like it's not gonna do anything to you, you know, it can't attack you, it can't physically
but it
harm
can be very
you.
Distressing
yeah. Like
it's all like mental torture.
Yeah.
Like this is so messed up. I'm like almost surprised no one thought to do that. Like I don't know what that says about me.
But now I have a fanfic idea, so thank you.
Oh no.
I know. Now I'm a little afraid to go to sleep at night.
Well, just remember, hold your wand and say ridiculous, just like David Thewlis.
Yes.
Where was I?
What else about boggarts? Go on.
Share a name with a creature from British folklore, and there are some similarities between the ones we see in Potter versus the ones from folklore. In folklore, boggarts are household spirits or spirits tied to a specific feature in a place, like a tree stump or a marsh. The household ones are generally more mischievous, causing small things to go wrong or vanish, and the ones tied to a certain location are more malevolent, like causing small children to vanish. If you don't want one, you can try to keep it away with a horseshoe over your door or salt outside of your bedroom door. But if you've got one and you try to move to get away from it, it's coming with you. It's part of the family. None of the boggarts share the shape-shifting aspect of the ones in Potter except for one variety in Lancashire, which doesn't specify that it turns into the viewer's greatest fear, but just shapeshifts. And that is boggarts. Pretty spooky stuff.
Pretty confidently say scared. My boggart would be a giant spider.
Don't forget, like, take its legs off.
Well, yeah, it's still gross.
It is still gross.
I still don't like it. Even on roller skates, I'm like, I don't like it.
Have y'all seen that post on Tumblr? It's like boggarts trying to deal with millennial Hogwarts students, and it's like trying to turn into a pile of student debt.
Yeah, how does...
No, but it sounds very fun.
It's fantastic.
How
yeah,
does
we can find
a boggart turn into, like, you know, non-physical things? Like, how would a boggart turn into existential dread?
Well, I guess
it could be your dead body.
Well, also, it does kind of turn into... drudgery by turning into a desk at the ministry with Newt.
Yeah.
So it kind of turns into something that is symbolic of the thing that is feared.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. I'm Googling it. I'm trying to remember how to spell millennial. Y'all, is this it?
Guys, I'm so dumb.
What?
Okay, you know what? I would let this fly, but then I would assume that this would be the time that a listener would call me out on my bullshit. Guys, there are no Boggarts in Cursed Child. They're Dementors.
Oh.
I'm dumb.
I was trying to remember when there were Boggarts in Cursed Child, but I only read the script once and then threw it out the window.
No.
So,
yeah, me too. I was just being dumb because it's so easy to, like, think of the two together. Because that's what they turned into a lot for Harry.
Mm-hmm.
But let the record state that I was just being dumb. And I picked up on it.
It's
so
too late.
No,
the emails are already coming in. You've already been added.
Yeah, like we're already getting nasty tweets.
And they found my personal email and they're CCing me.
Yeah.
Okay, I found it. This is from Tumblr user Mackle Sufficient. Now, I deeply, deeply love the Boggart lesson scene in POA for all of its symbolic character implications, but I'm sure that shit only would have worked in the 90s. Like, can you imagine that scenario with millennials? Poor Remus would have had to deal with shit like abandonment and crushing poverty hopping out of the wardrobe and getting turned into nun pizza with left beef.
Oh, no.
And then someone added, Remus Lupin voice, why did that student loan check turn into a sad frog? Amazing.
They are very interesting creatures.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't really think about the fact that they're not things until I was looking it up. Like, I thought they would be in Fantastic Beasts, but they're not beasts.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I guess let's head on out of the new case and leave the scary Boggarts and their scary wardrobes and jazzy music behind.
You know, I think they'd like it down there. It's nice and dark until the next time we open it up.
Yeah. And then they all come flying out.
Yeah, for whoever the next hosts are. Sorry, guys. Well, that's it for this episode. We hope you all enjoyed. And this week's podcast question is, how do you feel about these continuity errors at this point? Are you still furious, or are you able to laugh them off as time goes on between films? If the former, which makes you the angriest? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or send us an email at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And while you're sending us an owl or perusing the internet, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us grow our fan base and continue to be discovered by other Potter and Fantastic Beasts fans, and we always truly, deeply appreciate it.
And while you're out there on the internet, if you're looking for more fantastic content, you can be sure to find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, or if you want, as they said at the top of the show, it's $1 a month to support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. I'm Anne.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Shannon. Case closed.